Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Now, all week we've been talking about controversies in judicial races and specifically some controversies involving the San Diego County Bar Association's rating system. And today I am here with Carla Keene, who is a candidate for the Superior Court Judge seat number 20. And Carla, I understand that you are coming out with some pretty hard-hitting billboards in your campaign. I think this is a first in a judicial race. Tell us about that.
Well, Miriam, I think the billboards speak for themselves, and I think it's important that the voters know the truth about their elected officials, including judges, and that the fact that one of the judicial candidates, Judge Lisa Schall, has a criminal conviction, I think that's something the voters have a right to know.
So the billboard specifically, I understand that on one side it says to vote for Carla Keene, the only candidate not convicted of a crime. And on the other side, it says nobody's above the law, not even judges. Now, were you surprised to find, as I think some people may have been, that the County Bar Association, they rated you qualified, but they rated your opponent, the incumbent judge, well qualified?
Yes, that's a good question. Well, as you know, I'm an honors graduate of Princeton University and University of California Hastings College of Law. I served as an Army captain, was discharged with an honorable discharge. I've been a law professor this fall, and in fact, I just received an outstanding rating for my annual review from the U.S. Attorney's Office, where I've been for 18 years, and I just have to laugh and say, well, what does it take to get a well-qualified rating?
And you've, for the record, you've not had any negative ratings or any disciplinary actions by the State Bar Association or anything, any blight on your legal record?
That's correct. And my opponent, who did receive that well-qualified rating, she has three judicial admonishments, one for getting personally involved in a juvenile matter, the second one for abuse of the contempt power by throwing a female litigant in custody without due process of law, and a third judicial admonishment stemming from her arrest for driving drunk the wrong way down a four-lane divided highway. She then had the case continued for 6 months until 1 week after the ballot closed for the last election. And this is really the first election, this is the first election that the voters have the opportunity and have the knowledge of my opponent's background.
Judicial admonishments are extremely rare. We've done a little research on this and we found that less than 1% of sitting judges get even one admonishment, and she's had multiple admonishments. Now, in addition, equally seriously, maybe more seriously, she's also had a conviction for reckless driving. She actually originally was arrested for a DUI, drunk driving on the wrong side of the road, which was pled down to the reckless driving.
It's reckless driving with alcohol conditions, alcohol-related reckless driving.
Yeah, so it really begs the question, I guess, of what goes into the Bar Association's ratings. In all fairness to the Bar, which does not have a representative here today, and we have asked them, by the way, to explain their ratings on some of these candidates, but they rate this, according to their website, on a variety of criteria. Interestingly, education is not one of them. Where did your opponent get her educational degree from?
That's on her website. She went and received a combined undergraduate and law degree in 3 years from Western State, which was unaccredited in 1977 when she graduated.
So it was an unaccredited law school, and your years is from UC San Francisco Hastings. Very interesting on that. But as far as criteria that they list, education not being one of them, they do list knowledge of the law. They list trial experience, writing and research skills. A lot of these things are kind of subjective, though. Judicial temperament,
fairness, objectivity, courtesy and patience, judgment, common sense, compassion and understanding, integrity, and a few other things, physical and mental health, courage. And then there's this kind of nebulous category of any other factor that might affect the candidate's ability to serve as a judge. Do you think that the rating system is as transparent as you would like to see it?
Well, it's not transparent at all, and there really are no specific, measurable, articulable factors that, and more importantly, there's no explanation of why an individual gets a certain qualification. And in terms of well-qualified, it begs the question, what is my opponent well-qualified for?
Yeah, interesting. For those of you that may have not heard our discussions on this earlier in the week, there were also some questions over people who were ranked lacking qualifications. Nobody in your race got a lacking qualifications, but some other races, there were three candidates that did. At least one of them had a very extensive resume of things that she's done in the legal field, you know, and it really raised some questions. And she was alleging that she was receiving this rating because of a blog entry that she had criticizing a judge who took a woman that had been raped by her husband. He was convicted of this, of sodomy, and then turned around and ordered this woman to pay him alimony. So that particular candidate had actually taken this attorney had gone and lobbied the legislature to pass a law to prevent that from ever happening to any other woman who was a victim of
violent sexual abuse.
You shouldn't have to pay alimony. And she got a lacking qualifications rating. She alleges because she spoke out against a sitting judge before she was even a candidate. We've had others where there were some blights, perhaps. One was facing some disciplinary action by the bar himself, which he's appealing, and another had been ordered by a judge or stipulated in a judgment signed by a judge to change his ballot statement because he had inflated some claims that were made on his resume or on his ballot statement about his educational experience and his legal experience. So I guess begs the question of, it seems like the pendulum maybe has swung perhaps too far. On the one hand, we had well-intentioned effort perhaps by the Bar Association to try to educate the people more so that we would know if somebody had been disciplined by the bar or something like that. Voters would have a clue and have an idea. And on the other hand, now we seem to be seeing these ratings given out what may seem somewhat capriciously. Somebody who has a lot of qualifications rated not well qualified, and somebody else, in the case of your opponent, who actually has had a criminal conviction and multiple admonishments. Judge Lisa Shaw. So what is the answer here? If you could wave a magic wand, what would you do to make this ratings system more fair and more accurate? Or do you think it should just be abolished altogether, Carla?
I have a twofold answer. One is we vote for president, vice president, governor, all the elected officials, and there is no special rating system. We use our same common sense, and really, in the modern age, we have a great tool. We have the internet, we have Google, and there is just a huge amount of information that's readily available. And in my specific race, I invite the voters to Google me, Carla Keene, and Google my opponent, Lisa Shaw, S-C-H-A-L-L. There's an abundance of information about both of us. We do not have to rely on a small committee. And the factors that you pointed out seem to indicate there might be a rubber stamp process going on.
Now, Judge Shaw, in all fairness, she's not here today. She has served on the bench for over 28 years, primarily in family law. Another objective criteria that one can use for evaluating judges is how often their decisions are reversed on appeal. So how many times has Judge Shaw been reversed by an appellate court?
It's my understanding she's been reversed in whole or in part 13 times.
13 times.
We certainly welcome a conversation with Judge Shaw as well, if she is available to come on the show.
As a veteran, do you believe it's important to have some judges on the bench who have that type of experience? Is that an unusual experience for judges to have?
Yes, Miriam. You know, in San Diego County, 14% of our population are veterans, and especially now where we have Marines, we have sailors coming back with PTSD and many of the sacrifices that they've had by serving, it's very important to have elected officials and judges who know of their sacrifices and can deal with them and can deal with their legal problems, whether they be criminal or civil, with the respect and the knowledge that they deserve. I was a captain in the Army. I've since, in my service as a U.S. attorney, dealt with individuals with PTSD, and I am active in some veterans groups, and I really feel that's very important, especially on the bench. We only have 4 or 5 judges. We have an underrepresentation of veterans on the bench.
And how many Superior Court judges are there?
There's 125.
120, so only about 4 of those or 5 of those have military backgrounds. Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that information.
Thank you, ma'am.
Do you have any parting thoughts for us on this?
Yes, I do, Miriam. My biggest opponent is apathy. It's very important to get out and vote on June 3rd. In fact, judge races are very important, and the position of judge is very important, because more than any other elected official you're going to vote for on June 3rd, you're more likely to see a San Diego Superior Court judge. There's a 40% chance that at some point in your life you're going to be there to inherit some money, perhaps to get married, to adopt a child, or for a criminal or civil matter. And when you're in that courtroom and you're looking at that person in the black robe, at that point, you're going to understand how important it is to have a person who has the integrity, the experience, and the engagement in that process to make the right decisions and to know that your case will be heard and treated fairly and with respect.
Very good. For those of you that turned in late, we've been speaking with Carla Keene, who is a candidate for the San Diego County Superior Judge Seat 20 on the June ballot. Carla, thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Green Scene Report. The San Diego Energy Foundation has been seeking to start up a Community Choice Aggregate, or CCA, as a competitor to SDG&E. If approved by the city, this CCA would allow consumers to purchase power from the CCA instead of San Diego Gas and Electric. Marin County and Sonoma have already started up CCAs to give ratepayers more choices on where their power comes from. Here's how it works. When a community decides to start a CCA, it sends notices to all ratepayers advising them that their billing will automatically be shifted to the new CCA unless a person objects and wants to stay with the utility company. In San Diego's case, SDG&E. But now a bill in the legislature aims to restrict the ability of local municipalities to provide consumers with alternatives to buying power from utilities. Critics of the bill, AB 2145, call it a poison pill that would hurt, not help, consumers by restricting competition. If passed, the bill will require cities and counties to make consumers opt into a CCA instead of transferring them automatically unless they opt out. This would make it much harder to enroll enough customers to be economically viable. In Marin and other places where CCAs were established providing power from clean, locally generated power sources, less than 20% of those notified chose to opt out. Lane Sharman, co-founder of the San Diego Energy District Foundation, said that very few people opt in to anything. Thus, this bill guts the very provision of community energy law that assures a successful launch, all in on day one unless they opt out. In the Bay Area, Lean Energy's Sean Mitchell agreed, stating that AB 2145 would completely gut the ability of California communities to viably launch CCA programs that can compete on a level playing field with investor-owned utilities, EcoReport indicated. Marshall called the bill anti-consumer, anti-competition, and anti-environment. Ann Hancock, executive director of the Center for Climate Protection, called community choice the most powerful solution local governments have to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This bill would steal that solution from cities and counties throughout the state, she said. Sierra Club's Andrew Christie said that if AB 2145 passes, community choice will be replaced with zero choice. Despite these objections, the bill has passed a policy committee and has now been referred to the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
A report just issued by the San Diego County Grand Jury reveals that where you live in the city of San Diego affects how quickly emergency response teams can bring help to you when you need it. The report identified five areas in the city which experienced the longest emergency response times. They are Home Avenue in City Heights, Paradise Hills, the college area around San Diego State, Skyline, and Encanto. The grand jury concluded that the lag in response times is the net result of decades of delay in building new fire stations as the city grew from a relatively small city to a major metropolitan area, and also by the city's contract with its ambulance provider, Rural Metro. The contract requires Rural Metro to respond to all 911 calls without assessing the nature of the emergency, but only about 15% of incoming 911 calls are real emergencies. The grand jury recommends that the city develop a better protocol for screening emergency calls to separate the serious emergencies from calls of a trivial nature. The city should also modify its contract with Rural Metro to allow more flexibility in its response to calls, the grand jury said. In addition, training citizens who are living in the areas with slow response times in the use of CPR and placing automatic external defibrillators in many easily accessible public venues would improve outcomes for those in need of medical intervention. This could be done by the city alone or in collaboration with nonprofits such as the American Red Cross and American Heart Association, as well as community colleges that offer nursing or other medical training. According to the grand jury report, elsewhere, most communities have established response standards of 8 minutes or less 90% of the time for advanced life support services. Now, this report looked only at the city of San Diego, not the unincorporated areas of the county or other cities within the region. East County Magazine has learned that the average response times in rural areas is 10.5 minutes, though some responses have taken much longer, over 3 hours in the worst-case scenario, a public records request that we did. We'll be following up and doing a much more in-depth investigation on that very soon. The complete report can be found on the grand jury's website or at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a report on a lawsuit filed against the City of San Diego by the Union of Medical Marijuana Patients. The suit contends that the city's new regulations for medical marijuana dispensaries are too restrictive and won't allow enough dispensaries to meet the needs of patients citywide. The regulations adopted in March set distance requirements between marijuana collectives and homes, schools, and parks, as well as other family-oriented facilities. In addition, operators of cooperatives must get conditional use permits, renewable every 5 years, and public safety permits that must be renewed each year. The plaintiffs say that a map reveals that the new rules would allow no more than 30 cooperatives, but that these would be concentrated in certain parts of the city, forcing some patients to travel relatively far to obtain medical marijuana, Courthouse News Service reported. Even though regulations have been enacted, the process of applying to legally sell medical marijuana in San Diego is expected to take 6 months to a year, city officials have indicated.
This is Miriam Raftery reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ about racism issues that are shadowing the California gubernatorial election. Assemblyman Tim Donnelly, a Republican candidate for governor, is drawing nationwide media coverage for his racist and anti-immigrant views. Donnelly founded California's largest Minuteman chapter of the Vigilante Border Group. Now he is drawing fire for anti-Muslim remarks made about a prominent member of his own party, Neil Kashkari. Donnelly and Kashkari are two of the 14 candidates in the gubernatorial primary, including five Republicans. Donnelly has won the endorsement, though, of East County Republican Brian Jones, as well as the Tea Party.
At the state Republican convention, Assemblyman Jones said he believed Donnelly had heeded party leaders' advice to be more inclusive in his message. Jones added that he believed Donnelly was saying the same things, but in a more welcoming manner. But the California chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations has found Donnelly's latest remarks to be far from welcoming. The group has called on Donnelly to repudiate an anti-Muslim Facebook post that falsely accused fellow candidate Neil Kashkari of being tied to Sharia law. Kashkari, son of immigrants from India, is actually Hindu, not Muslim, according to the site Loon Watch. Kashkari is also the former Assistant Treasury Secretary for the U.S. Treasury Department. The Facebook page claimed that Kashkari made the U.S. submit to the Islamic Sharia banking code in 2008 when he ran TARP. Donnelly has also implied that his opponent is part of a conspiracy by Muslims to take over the government. Some prominent Republicans have denounced Donnelly over his remarks. State Republican Vice Chairwoman Harmeet Dillon said such tactics are troubling and irresponsible. Donnelly's Facebook entry also included a link to a column by Frank Gaffney. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups and their leaders, called Gaffney the anti-Muslim movement's most paranoid propagandist. The Southern Poverty Law Center also lists Tim Donnelly himself on its short list of extremist political candidates back when he ran for the assembly seat, which he won. Donnelly is the only California legislator on that watch list. Donnelly has said that if elected governor, he wants to pass a state law to make it a state crime to be in the U.S. illegally, like Arizona did, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. In the legislature, he cast the only vote in favor of allowing Confederate Civil War flags to be sold on state property, despite the symbol's offensiveness to African Americans. A statement by the Council on American-Islamic Relations read, "It is a shame that an elected official uses xenophobic and anti-Muslim rhetoric to discredit a member of his own party. Mr. Donnelly not only demonized his opponent, but he also alienated the entire Muslim electorate." The statement concluded, "We urge responsible leaders of the Republican Party to repudiate Mr. Donnelly's smear campaign and to marginalize any member of their party who uses such divisive and hateful discourse."
Nearly half of California's birds are migrating north to a forest that's under threat from climate change and development. A new report on what's been called North America's bird nursery says at least half of Canada's boreal forest must be kept free of large-scale industrial development. Dr. Fritz Reed with Ducks Unlimited says this is an achievable goal since most of the forest is still intact.
So it's one of the only places on the globe that you can actually get in before major development and do something that allows development but allows it to be done in a responsible, sustainable way.
The report says it's important to conserve big blocks of habitat. Reed explains interconnected protected areas are necessary to maintain the diversity of species and support healthy populations. He says protecting the water supply is also a big concern. The report also says bird-related recreation is big business. Dr. Jeff Wells with the Boreal Songbird Initiative says in 2013, bird-watching trips and equipment generated more than $40 billion in revenue, or about five times the year's total revenue for Major League Baseball.
On top of that, birds are important plant pollinators, pest controllers, distributors of seeds that maintain forest diversity and healthy forests, and they're some of our top environmental indicators.
The report entitled Boreal Birds Need Half, Maintaining North America's Bird Nursery and Why It Matters, was released jointly by the Boreal Songbird Initiative and Ducks Unlimited. It says bird populations already are coping with the effects of climate change, which has reduced their habitat for nesting and breeding and altered their migration patterns throughout North America. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
A pilot at Gillespie Field in El Cajon had a rough landing Saturday night. Shortly before 7:30 p.m., Heartland Fire and Rescue crews responded to a report of a plane crash at the airport. Firefighters arrived to find that a single-engine Cessna had landed without its landing gear, sliding to a stop on the runway. Fortunately, there was no fire and the pilot was not injured. The runway was closed temporarily until the disabled aircraft could be towed off the runway. The cause of the crash is under investigation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
On Tuesday, May 6, CAL FIRE and other agencies talked on the coming fire season. Among the guests was U.S. Secretary of the Interior, Sally Jewell. Before the event, East County Magazine had a chance to talk with her press secretary, Jessica Kephaw. According to Kephaw,
National Climate Assessment has really put a spotlight on the effects of climate change that produce longer, drier, hotter fire seasons, especially in this part of the world and in this part of the country. The president has put forward a budget proposal that will treat severe and emergency fires as they should be treated, as emergencies, similar to those that are handled by FEMA, like earthquakes and tornadoes, so that we have the funding that we need so we're not robbing Peter to pay Paul.
KEPCO also emphasized that the secretary did fly over our back country where...
to see that changing interface and the challenges that these fires are presenting in very difficult landscapes with development all around.
We also talked about invasive species, which, with changing climate, can establish themselves and do damage. We specifically also talked about the gold borer beetle. KEPCO stated that...
and they certainly have an extensive program to help root out invasive species, which are a problem when it comes to fighting fires because they exacerbate those impacts on the landscape.
The secretary also thanked the Golden Eagle Hotshot crew from Sequan for the work they do. We were also able to ask the secretary about a treaty between Mexico and the United States, just in Arizona, that would allow for mutual aid between the two countries up to 10 miles into the territories. Something similar here in San Diego might have allowed Cal Fire to enter Mexico a week ago to deal with a structure fire. She said that the federal government are in talks with their Mexican counterparts to expand this treaty to the whole of the border region, but there is no timeline as of yet. We had a chance to talk with Chief Villalpalda of the Sequan Fire Department. He told East County Magazine that the Gold Eagle hotshots will be off around the country because...
simply because they're a national resource. And like right now, Oklahoma's on fire, right? So when these guys... if that's still going and these guys come online, then chances are they're going to head on out.
We spoke about mutual aid and how well it works.
And it works really well here in California. In fact, we're pretty much the leaders of it and how it always happened. And in particular, Southern California, with tribal, federal, and state resources all coming together and working together, and local government coming together.
Lastly, East County Magazine talked with Captain Dave Moss of the San Diego Sheriff's Department, who is the director of Austria.
We fly when we're needed. So I guess that question means, you know, how bad will it be this year? And, of course, I'm always optimistic, but I'm very cautious about that because the rain, we didn't really get any rain, and everything is just ready, and we're all very worried about it.
He added the worry he has about the fire season.
We respond to any call of smoke or fire. Nothing's too small as far as the wildlands. And so I don't know. I hope not very much, but we're all very worried because we have, you know, one of the driest, if not the driest year ever.
Authorities at the federal, state, and local level are worried and warn citizens that 95% of all fires are human caused and that the drought is the most severe they have seen. They also warned that citizens have to keep their defensible space, and we saw this space work extremely well in Santee last week, where the fire burned to the fence line. They suggest people register their cell phones with readysandiego.gov to get reverse 911 calls, and they also suggest you visit readyforwildfire.org. Most importantly, if you are told to evacuate, do so. This is Nadine Abbott for KNSJ and East County Magazine.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The next time someone tells you you need some young blood, they just might be right. It turns out that old mice who were infused with blood from spry young mice showed significant improvement in their memory, sensory function, strength, and endurance. The mice also had improvements in certain heart problems and even generated new nerve cells. The findings could hold promise as a potential treatment to slow or reverse dementia and other old-age-related conditions in humans. Science and Nature Medicine has published study results which found that a protein called growth differentiation factor 11, or GDF11, is responsible for this apparent fountain of youth effect in the mice. Older mice have reduced blood flow that impacts the brain, heart, nerves, and sense of smell, like in humans. Old mice infused with young blood were able to regain their sense of smell, researchers found, and they were able to navigate their way through mazes. Researchers hope to test GDF11 on humans in future clinical trials. Lee Rubin, a professor of stem cell and regenerative biology at Harvard, said this could mean a way to reverse some of the decline of aging with a single protein, the Sacramento Bee reported. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is a public service announcement from the city of El Cajon. El Cajon's recreational department is looking for energetic and motivated teens ages 14 to 17 to volunteer for the city's popular summer camp program. This is a great opportunity for those who want to gain valuable work experience and meet new friends, said Monica Zek, spokesperson for El Cajon. Typically, volunteers will be asked to work Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. and will work directly with staff in a variety of themed camps, such as indoor soccer, dodgeball, multisports, art, and fairy tale. You can pick up a volunteer application at the Bostonia Recreation Center between 2 and 9 p.m. Monday through Friday at 1049 Bostonia Street, El Cajon. For additional information, call 619-441-1670 and ask for Glennis Stainbrook, Recreation Services Supervisor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program features events to honor Mom for Mother's Day, such as Tea with the Queen, along with family activities, art, an Old West saloon, literature, and golf. In our preview, we have selected some film and theater and a patriotism event for next weekend. A Tea with the Queen Mother's Day event takes place on Saturday, May 10th at 12 p.m., Fusion Glass Company Gallery and Studio is offering a unique Mother's Day event for this fourth annual Fun Tea Party. Guests can sip tea and nibble delicate treats while feasting their gaze on the new artworks in the gallery and speaking to the artists taking part in the current show. Guests can also create a mini artwork of their own. Guests will be able to listen to Bill from All Things Bright and British in La Mesa as he discourses on the many benefits of this wonderful ancient beverage, teaching guests when to drink the oolong as opposed to the lapsang souchong. Then tea drinkers can take their teacup to an intuitive tea leaf reader for a glimpse into their future. And the talented ladies from the San Diego Silk Guild will be there to show off some of the new wearable art they've created. Their silks will be on sale. Quick cosmetology makeovers and a vintage hat collection will help moms to prepare for a photo in the photo booth. RSVPs are suggested. The second annual Granite Hills Football Golf Tournament will be held on Saturday, May 10th at Cottonwood Golf Club in El Cajon. Rain or shine, check-in time is 11 a.m. with the shotgun start scramble at 12 noon. There will be a silent auction, goodie bags, and drawing prizes, along with a dinner at the end where awards for first, second, and third prize will be given out. Another Wild in the Country Gala will be held at Lions, Tigers, and Bears Big Animal Rescue in Alpine on Saturday, May 10th from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. Besides viewing the animals, the facility will have live and silent auctions, an opportunity raffle, live music, and fun for the whole family. Dinner will be provided during the event and is included in the ticket price. Hacienda Casablanca Mexican Restaurant and Cantina is having a champagne all-you-can-eat Mother's Day brunch on Sunday, May 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The restaurant offers an omelet station, many other breakfast traditions, soup bar, salad and fruit bar, hot lunch items, carving station, street tacos, homemade tortillas, and a dessert and pastry station. Celebrating literature in the city of La Mesa, the San Diego County Library is hosting Authors and Artists, a free and informative event from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 10th. Featured will be local authors and artists, book signings and sales, local artwork sales, and food trucks. There will be a special presentation by Richard Lederer, renowned wordsmith from public radio and the San Diego Union-Tribune, The Writing Life, a presentation on ebook publishing, writing your memoirs, as well as free art evaluations for those who bring a piece of their visual art. The event will be held at the La Mesa Civic Center behind the La Mesa Library. Visitors are also invited to celebrate the newly remodeled La Mesa Library at 10 a.m. In downtown El Cajon at Prescott Promenade, Friday night dinner and a concert season has begun, where spectators can enjoy great music and dancing every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m., with the exceptions of June 13th and July 4th, when the concerts will be held on Thursday, June 12th, and July 3rd with the Farmers Market. Visitors to downtown El Cajon can arrive early to dine at one of the many restaurants downtown, some with discounts for the evening, or bring their own picnic and lawn chairs. We have two Julian events in a row, and there will be another one coming up in our preview. Julian Women's Club will hold their annual wildflower show from May 7th through 10th in the historical town hall in Julian. Members of the Julian Women's Club gather wildflowers from all areas in and around Julian, including high mountain, desert, oak and pine forest, chaparral, and high desert. The Julian Arts Guild will host its annual spring show, Art Potpourri, this Mother's Day weekend, Friday, May 9th through Sunday, May 11th, at the Julian Town Hall on Main Street in Julian. The show will open each day at 10 a.m. and close at 6 p.m. The public is also invited to the artist's reception on Friday, May 9th at 6 p.m. Talented artists from Julian and nearby communities will present their paintings, photography, mosaics, ceramics, printmaking, jewelry, and other works of fine art. Admission to the Julian Arts Guild show is free, and many of the artists will be available to discuss their work. St. Madeline Sophie's Auxiliary presents Bunko Madness on Saturday, May 10th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Elks Lodge, number 1812, to benefit adults with developmental disabilities. A light lunch will be served, and guests can expect door prizes, a Chinese auction, and other prizes. Cottonwood Golf Club is hosting a Mother's Day brunch in the Pavilion and Spring Gardens on Sunday, May 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The brunch includes a carving station with tri-tip turkey and ham, chicken entrees and fresh fish, cheese enchiladas, a waffle station, and desserts. Acumba Hot Springs is the site of an historical walk on Saturday, May 10th at 10 a.m., hosted by the Acumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance. Walkers can wear comfortable shoes and bring something to drink. Now for this week's Destination East County Preview, El Cajon Valley Lions Club is preparing for their fundraising event called Gunsmoke 4 on Saturday night, May 17th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Ronald Reagan Community Center in El Cajon. It's a night of gambling and carousing in an Old West saloon. The Winchester Widows reenactors will be assisting the Lions. It's tea time again, and this occasion is the Alpine Women's Club Victorian Tea on May 17th, when they celebrate their 21st annual Alpine Women's Club Scholarship Fundraiser at the historic Town Hall in Alpine. This year's entertainment will be Fashion Through Time, a show spanning a century of fashionable attire presented by members of the San Diego Costumers Guild. There will be two tea sittings, one at 11:30 and the other at 2:30 p.m. This event is open to the public and Victorian dress is optional. The first annual Salvation Army East County Golf Tournament will be held at Cottonwood Golf Club on Wednesday, May 14th. This fundraiser to benefit the Salvation Army East County Food Bank is called Driving Ahead to Prevent Hunger. And it includes a check-in beginning at 10 a.m., a shotgun start at 12 noon, and a dinner and awards ceremony following the tournament. Julian Wilden Scenic Film Festival is now an annual event and will be held on Friday, May 16th at 6 p.m. at Julian High School. The festival presents a wide variety of international films that celebrate nature, the environment, and people who are making a difference. The festival includes a farm-to-table event Friday night, live music, awards party, and filmmaker Q&As. Proceeds benefit the Vulcan Mountain Foundation. Young Actors Theater presents a production of Bye Bye Birdie at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley. Character Conrad, the Elvis Presley type, has to say goodbye, and Kim McAfee from Sweet Apple, Ohio, is chosen to receive his kiss before he is inducted in the Army. Performances run from Friday, May 16th through May 24th. The San Diego Festival Chorus presents a patriotic spectacular on Sunday, May 18th at 3 p.m. at the College Avenue Baptist Church in San Diego. East County's San Diego Festival Chorus will be performing a concert to honor Memorial Day, our country, and its military veterans. The 90-voice, 48-piece symphony orchestra presents a program that includes a posting of the colors with musicians dressed in Civil War uniforms and anthems from the four branches of our military and more. Explore Mission Trails Day event is happening on Saturday, May 17th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and is a way for children and families to discover all about the natural world. This is a free annual event with nature trail hikes, pony rides, dozens of discovery stations, along with other hands-on activities, crafts, and animal encounters. Also, at this time, the Visitor Center Art Gallery at Mission Trails has a solo artist, Dolwayne Green, photography exhibit going on for visitors. A new exhibit by the Colored Pencil Society of America, San Diego chapter, will be featured from May 24th through June 20th, 2014. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Harry?
This is Miriam Raftery with an agricultural report. A deadly new virus has wiped out 10% of all pigs in America in the last year, the National Journal reports. Now, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's chief economist, Dr. Joseph Glauber, the porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, or PED, has spread to 30 states. That includes California, the California Department of Food and Agriculture confirms. Most older pigs recover within 7 to 10 days, but the virus is deadly for nearly 100% of baby pigs under 3 weeks old. There is no vaccine, no effective treatment, and no cure. The first case of PED in the United States occurred at an Ohio farm 1 year ago in May of 2013. It's not known how it entered the United States, though it's also been found in Asia and now Canada. Some have theorized that China may be where the pig virus originated. China, the world's top consumer of pork, has banned imports of live pigs and pig feed from the U.S. So has Japan and now France in an effort to slow the spread of the disease. There are also some interstate restrictions on transporting pigs within the United States. Here in San Diego County, with the county fair at Del Mar and the Ramona County Fair both coming up, it's important for people entering livestock for judging to be aware of these steps to take to protect your animals and others. California's Department of Food and Agriculture cautions those who raise pigs or exhibit them at fairs to take care to wash your hands after handling the animals and improve sanitary conditions, since the virus is spread through manure that can survive even in small bits that travel on boots or in trucks. Some farmers require workers to change clothes and shoes after entering pigsties or even ban visitors to their farms. The BBC reports that some suspect pig feed may also play a role in spreading the disease. That's because dried pig blood has been added to some feed given to weaned piglets. A video shot by the Humane Society has sparked outrage, showing what it called a piglet smoothie made from infected animals being fed to sows at a Kentucky farm, and yet this practice has not been banned. PED causes vomiting and diarrhea in infected pigs. In California, the disease must be reported to the state. Across the nation, the impact on pig farmers has been severe, with some farmers hardest hit by the virus left with little to sell, Dr. Glauber told the House Committee on Agriculture's Subcommittee on Livestock, Rural Development, and Credit on April 30th. The good news is that the virus poses no risk to humans, agriculture officials say. The bad news is that if you plan to serve pork at your next summer barbecue, you'd better plan on paying a lot more, since due to the viral outbreak, pork prices have risen 20% in the past year.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Vermont is poised to become the first state in the nation to enact legislation requiring labeling of products that contain genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. Governor Pete Shumlin is expected to sign the bill on May 8th. Passage of the bill paves the way for other states to follow suit. Also, food manufacturers may reformulate their products nationwide to be GMO-free rather than create special labels in just one state or several if more states with GMO bills pending follow suit. Already, Connecticut and Maine have passed GMO labeling laws, but with trigger clauses requiring several other states to pass labeling requirements before these go into effect. Some other states have ballot initiatives pending. This has already occurred in other countries that have required labeling or banned GMO products altogether. But the grocery industry doesn't want consumers to know if foods are genetically modified or not. So, the Grocery Manufacturers Association is trying to push a bill through Congress that would preempt Vermont's new law or similar laws in other states in the future, the Organic Consumers Association warns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I just came from a client's house where we spent almost all of our time talking about how she needs to change her watering. When I asked her, "How often do these sprinklers come on?" she said, "Every day." And I said, "Oh my goodness." And I said, "What's your motivation in having me here today? What is it that you need us to talk about?" And she says, "I'm spending so much money on water, and it doesn't really pay for itself because I'm not getting the kind of fruit I want, and my plants don't look that great." So I thought this would be a great thing to talk about. Most of us overwater, and in overwatering, that really means we're probably watering much too shallow and much too often. Here, it's hot, and the sun beats down on the soil, and it dries out the soil, and then the roots get dried out, and then the plant suffers. How do we change that? Well, we change it by not watering every day, every other day, every third day. What we want to do is possibly not even change the mechanics of how we're watering. We just want to go to the time clock and change the timing. If you're watering for 5 minutes every day, you would do much better for your plants to water 20 minutes every fourth day, and then possibly even stretch it out from there with a few other tricks I'll tell you. But the main thing to understand is if you are watering every day for just a few minutes,
then what's happening is the roots are only going to grow where the water is, in the top 4 to 5 to 6 inches of soil. And in that depth, there is no resistance built in for when the Santa Anas come, for when it gets to be past the 4th of July and it's 100 degrees in East County or higher. Those poor plants have to depend on where their roots have grown in that surface area of the soil. So what happens when you change that? What happens is that the more water you give, the less frequently, the further down the roots will go. So if you can train your plant roots by watering correctly, the roots will grow down deeper. They will withstand our heavy, heavy winds and that beating down sun of midsummer, and your plants will be much healthier and much happier. This is especially true of plants that come that are either native here, which you hardly ever water, or the plants that most of us use, the Mediterranean type plants. These are plants that are used to going a while between waterings. Your citrus trees. People come to me and say their citrus isn't doing very well. It looks kind of funny. I say, how often are you watering? Every other day. Okay, that's the problem. You don't even have to go look to find out what the problem is. What you need to do is water your citrus between maybe once a week. If it's a big old tree and it's been in a long time, every couple of weeks, maybe every 3 weeks. I have a lemon tree on my property that we water religiously in June, July, August, and September, once each month. But when we do water, we water it nice and deep. We water it so that the water goes down at least 2 feet deep. Makes a huge difference. And then the other thing that we're going to do with our watering issue is we're going to mulch everything. But that's something I'll talk about in another one of these episodes.
The United States Forestry Service cannot charge day-use fees to hikers who don't use facilities, a federal judge ruled on April 30th. United States District Court Judge Terry Hatter Jr. found that Cleveland National Forest, along with the Angeles, Los Padres, and San Bernardino National Forests, violated the law by requiring paid passes at busy sites, even if hikers were merely parking and not using facilities such as picnic tables or toilets. Regional passes cost $5 a day or $30 a year. The passes have brought in millions of dollars for the four Southern California forests. A regional forestry service representative indicated the agency is reviewing the decision and has declined to comment, the Los Angeles Times reported. In San Diego County, the ruling stands to impact visitors to the Cleveland National Forest, where fees have been imposed even in places with no facilities, such as the popular trail to Cedar Creek Falls in East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
When Alpine resident Alana Light heard about the tragic sinking of a Korean ferry boat, she feared for her 24-year-old daughter, who teaches English at a private school in South Korea. "My dad called me and asked if Kayla was all right," she recalled, adding that when she heard about the tragedy, quote, "I had a panic attack until I got through to her." Fortunately, Kayla was fine, but at least 242 passengers on the Seawall ferry have died and another 60 remain missing. Most of those passengers were high school students. The captain and 14 crew members have been arrested for leaving the ship and abandoning passengers, including children told to stay in their cabins. Two others have also been arrested for overloading the ship, which had 476 people on board. An operations technician for a local TV station, Light observed that the biggest worldwide change in coverage of such tragedies has been the rampant use of cell phones to videotape and narrate events. She told East County Magazine, "No fictional Hollywood-produced movie can ever compare with the deadly reality of the video uploaded to YouTube of the future drowning victims. These poor students documented the horrors as they died." Light said she forced herself to read the transcripts, unable to bear watching the horrific video footage with audio. But the worst irony she found was that it didn't have to happen. The shipping company compromised safety to make more money, she said, and it could have happened anywhere, to anybody. The ship was owned by the family of millionaire Yoo Byung-un, founder of a religious cult in which 32 members committed suicide in 1987. He has owned many business interests, including the Highland Springs Resort in California and an organic farm at that facility, and he's also known as the photographer Ahe. Yu has denied ties to the ill-fated ship, which is owned by his sons. Move to raise awareness of the tragedy and help raise funds for victims' families, Light wrote a poem and created a video tribute to the victims with photos documenting the tragedy. She hopes many people will share her video, since YouTube will pay if she gets enough hits to make it go viral. I will donate anything it brings in to a victim's family fund, she pledges. Let us hope nothing like this happens again. The video is titled Tribute to the Victims of the Sewol, that's S-E-W-O-L, and can be viewed on YouTube or in the World Watch section at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Iris Neal. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
More and more baby boomers are ditching the 9-to-5 and becoming their own boss. To help make that happen, AARP and the Small Business Administration are matching Encore entrepreneurs with mentors who provide counseling and training. Sheree Gillens with AARP California says starting a small business is a great way for many older Californians to generate income after retirement or to turn a passion into a paycheck.
They bring a lifetime of experience and knowledge gained from their careers. They have savings that they can tap into. So it's a great career option if you're looking to boost your income or create jobs. But what's key is getting connected to the right support and training and mentoring.
A recent AARP survey found 15% of workers between the ages of 45 and 74 are self-employed. Plus, another 13% are planning to start a business once they retire. Gillen says small business owners who get long-term counseling may see bigger sales, hire more workers, and their businesses have more longevity. Gillen says older business owners are a growing trend, with an estimated 7.4 million self-employed Americans over age 50. She says nearly 200 people attended an Encore Entrepreneur Mentoring event this past weekend in Whittier.
They learned about everything from starting and managing your own business to getting capital to using technology that you can use to process transactions. They also heard about the importance of social media because without it, you're invisible.
Gillen says Californians looking to start their own business can find more information and resources online at aarp.org/startabusiness. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.